Nice. That's money.
All right, I think it's about that time. Doors are still open, but I tend to go long, so I'm going to start a little bit early. Don't sue me if I hit you in the wrong place, but I talked to the Xamarin guys this week, and I said I'm going to do a Xamarin demo. Give me some monkeys to throw out. All right, who wants a monkey? So, all right. Nice. I don't really. Last year we did some of that at TechEd Guam. I can't remember which one. And we had T-shirts. And there's a gentleman on the Azure marketing team named Mark Brown, who's a wonderful man. And he had this rubber band. It was like 30 feet long. And he's like, all right, come out on stage. So we get out on stage, and two of us have to hold one end, and then one guy goes way back and like leans down and just shoots the T-shirt out. So the organizer of TechEd is in the back, like, watching everything, you know, because it hasn't started yet. All of a sudden, we launch a shirt, and it misses a camera by like 3 inches. He goes, done, done, no more. So I try not to tag people with gifts, but the Xamarin guys tell me to give out monkeys, I give out monkeys. So, anybody go to the other Xamarin talk this week? Anybody play with Xamarin yet? It's a really cool product. I highly recommend you take a peek at it. I'm going to show you a little bit about it today in one of the latter demos. Hopefully we'll get to that demo. It's a pretty neat one. But you're here today to talk about, or to listen to me talk about, ASP.NET Web API. Let me clarify something. I am not going to tell you how to do Web API. I am going to tell you how to talk to Web API from everything but a web page. Okay? I'm going to show you one little web demo kind of at the end. I'm going to talk about something called CORS, not the beer, C-O-R-S, cross-origin resource sharing. I'm going to talk about that. That's probably the one demo that I'm going to do where I'm accessing one from a web client. Reason I tell you that, if you're here to learn about the internals or the ins and outs of Web API, there are way other better sessions that you could go to, such as Dan Ross' session. Damien does a pretty good talk on Web API, as does Mr. Hanselman. So if you're here to learn like how to do Web API, you spend a lot of money and a lot of time to get here, so go to another session because I'm not going to show you that. I want to give you the opportunity to go to something that's more appropriate for your needs. But if you're here to learn how to use Web API with like a modern app or a mobile app or a Java app or any other app that's not a web app, you're in the right place. So, okay, good, we're good here. All right, just making sure. Couple introductions. One of the things I get picked on a lot is that I don't really talk about myself that much. Not as much as I should. I don't do a good intro. I'm gonna go ahead and do an intro real quick. My name is Brady Gaster. I'm a Windows Azure technical evangelist. I focus on Windows Azure websites. I also play a lot with SignalR and ASP.NET and Web API. Those are kind of my dog and ponies. I really enjoy them. I work kind of closely with Scott Hunter's team, the ASP.NET team. Also work a lot with the Visual Studio team on some things here and there. But I'm a Windows Azure guy. I'm going to show you something in Azure today, but it's not going to be an Azure talk. It's going to be a Web API talk. You can find me at Twitter. You can attest to the fact that I'm pretty much addicted to it. And if you're not following me, feel free to do so. Brady Gaster, and that's my name on pretty much every other social media thing out there. I also have a blog, bradygaster.com. On that website, I talk about all of the things that I just mentioned. Specifically, I talk a lot about websites and SignalR. I have one wife. Her name is Gina. I have two sons, Gabe and Lucas. I have two chihuahuas, and I won't give you my spiel about how chihuahuas are for manly men, a.k.a. Mickey Rourke, had 7. So don't tease me about it, because if you've seen Mickey Rourke, you know he's not an unmanly man. I have 2 guitars, a Gretsch and a Fender, neither of which I really have that much time to play, because I have 2 kids, 2 dogs, and 1 wife, and a job. I'm originally from North Carolina, hence the funny accent. I can go ahead and tell you that it's been really warm to be home this week in the South. I've enjoyed it. I live out in Redmond, so it's nice to get back to the South, back to, you know, the accents that I've grown up with. So that's good stuff. All right, enough about me. What are we going to talk about today? I'm going to show you an example scenario. And the example scenario we're going to probably use through a good number of the demonstrations. The example scenario is kind of silly, but the idea behind it is you have this web API that you need to put out there that does one thing. The one thing that it's going to do is it's actually going to take your Latin long, and it's going to give you back the zip code or the like nearest five zip codes around that Latin long point based on how big of a circle you want. I'm going to show you how to do that using EF Spatial. I'm not going to go too deep into EF Spatial today, but I'm just going to show it to you because I'm kind of a geofreak, and I have this database with all the US zip codes in it that I like to play with. Why is that valuable? Because let's say you have a store and you have multiple locations for that store, and you don't want to have to maintain a list of all the zip codes in the country. You want to pay somebody else to do that and to use their API so that whenever you get somebody's Latin long, you get all the zip codes from this service. Then you look up all the restaurants or all the locations that you have and the zip codes around that person. Make sense? Is that logical? All right, just a simple little service. That's the example scenario. I'm going to talk a little bit about some various web API test clients. I'm one of the one Microsoft guys out there, other than Chris Reisner, who showed you yesterday how to use this tool called Postman in Chrome. It's a Chrome plugin that you can actually make REST calls back and forth. I'm going to talk to you about portable class libraries. Shorthand version of that is PCL. Brady's version of that is pickle. So I'm going to talk to you today about pickles. And if you don't like pickles, I don't either. So, you know, hopefully it won't offend you. I'm going to talk to you then about modern and mobile apps using Windows 8 and Windows Phone 8. Then I'm going to show you some core stuff, cross-origin resource sharing. And then I'm going to show you something new. All right? And just to clarify what this new thing is, the number one question that I have been asked all week, no matter where I am or what I'm doing, is about web API and authorization and authentication. How many of you have been wondering how to do that in the past? Okay, good. I might be able to answer your question today. Might be able to show you some code. Granted, it is a lot of code, but I'm going to show you some code today that will show you that we are going to answer that question for you very soon. The code that I'm going to show you is code that is currently being worked on by the VS team. It's going to be a lot of code that we're just going to walk through, and I'm going to show you how it works and basically show you kind of the finer points of it. But then I also want to tell you that some of the code that I'm going to show you today is going to be rolled up into the framework, and it's going to be a lot easier for you to use it when VS 2013 comes out. So for those of you that have wanted to do Web API and you wanted to do authorization with Web API, you now have an answer. I'm not going to go very deep into that answer. If you want to listen to somebody talk to you about that to the like deepest levels of the ocean, go to one of Vittorio's talks, or go to one of Dan Ross' talks, because those guys are working together to solve the auth problem in Web API. And I can tell you that right now, we're going to solve that problem for you very, very soon. Very, very, very soon. Okay? You probably heard Brian Harry talk about the release cycle. You'll be able to see some of that stuff coming pretty soon. Interestingly enough, some of the code that I'm going to show you today is code that was created in a Visual Studio 2013 project. I'm going to open that code up in Visual Studio 2012, and it's not going to ask me to do anything. It's not going to get confused. Isn't that exciting? It's similar to like Visual Studio 2012 and Visual Studio 2010, when we're backwards and forwards compatible. Pretty cool, huh? All right. I'm also probably going to show you some other stuff. Now, here's the example scenario. What I'm going to do real quick is switch over to my computer, if I can remember which button to push here. There we go. All right, so what I've got here is I've got a database that's local. I'm just going to go ahead and run a query here, zoom in on it real quick, and you'll see that from left to right we have an ID, then we have a zip code, a city, a state, and what appears to be a blob field. That is not a blob field. That is a SQL Server spatial field that contains information about geolocation. All right, it's a special data type in SQL Server that EF works with very, very well. So that's kind of what our demo is going to be today, and I'm going to kind of walk through this and access it through an API. Right. So that's the example scenario. Now, here's a little bit of code. I'm going to dive into this code here in a second. Here's the first part. We have an Entity Framework class. In this class, we have basically all the same representation that you have in that database. Just so you know, I created this model and used EF migrations to generate my database. So you can do that just by creating a DB geography field in your class. Here's the thing about the DB geography field. It doesn't serialize very well. It's got a whole bunch of different data points on it. If you were to serialize it, it would just expand gratuitously. And what do you usually want when you're talking about geo? You only really want 2 points, right? You want latitude and longitude. So what I'm going to do here is I'm going to create a view model class that inside of our controller, we're going to actually transform that data entity that we get back from the database into a view model that we're then going to serialize into JSON. I'll just show you this on the screen because I want you to kind of understand really these are the two entities that we're going to be working with for the majority of these demos. Like I said, the point of this talk is really to show you how to access web APIs from mobile clients and from modern clients, not to kind of dive deep into how web API works. Anybody go to any other web API talks this week? Dan Ross or Vittorio's? Vittorio? You guys know what I'm talking about? He's got hair down here. Really smart guy. Big identity guy. All right, so we're going to run this sample API real quick. Switch back over to my code. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to go over here to my demo folder. I'm just going to open up the sample API for you. And I'm going to show you what this looks like. Now I've got two projects in here. Can everybody see that okay in the back? Is that all right? Groovy. Cool. I've got a sample data layer, which is kind of like my core project, my data access project that I'm going to be accessing through my code, through my controller and whatnot. Just to show you what that stuff looks like real quick, there's our DTO. It's our entity framework entity. I'm going to go ahead and open up the models class here. You're going to see two things here. You're going to see that US location view model that I showed you in the slide earlier. And you're going to see a second thing called distance query. Okay, let me tell you what that is. I'm one of those really obsessive people that believes that after you get to two parameters in a method, you're probably going to eventually have 17 parameters in that method. And that becomes what? Chaos, unruly, right? So what I do is I create a request object for all of my APIs. You can use a post to send that up the wire, or you could do something like in a query string, something along those lines, or use attribute routing to pass those in the URL. We're probably going to be doing a lot of stuff with posting or in the URL today. I'm not going to actually post an island over, but we're going to be getting an island back. But I wanted to show you that because that's kind of how we're going to make requests against the API. Last thing that I'll open up here, I'm going to go ahead and say this too. I forgot to say this in the beginning. I have a lot of ground to cover today, so I'm going to hold questions until the end, if at all possible. I'm not trying to be rude. I just want to cover all the material for you. But I'll definitely be around to answer questions. And again, if I don't get to you, please take one of my cards and get in touch with me. All right, so here's our data context class. It's really just a pretty simple entity framework repository. I'm not inheriting from anything because I've got this guy right over here. You go to definition, and you'll see that there's our simple little, oh, that's not good. That's scary. All right. Looks like it compiles now. Magical. Love NuGet. All right, so here's our simple little, EF context class. It's just going to have that table hanging off of it, so I'll be able to access my data. And then I've got this repository right here that I'm going to basically create a, kind of an abstraction layer around it. And I've got a method called getByDistance. What am I passing in? An instance of my distance query object. Now, this call right here, dbGeographyFromText, basically what you do is you pass in the longitude first and the latitude second. See the order? Playing games here. I've got one going first and zero going second. It's longitude, latitude. Trust me, it's confusing. When I saw that, I was like, well, it's not alphabetical, right? So it confuses me sometimes, so I just put it into this guy to call it the right way. But it is longitude first, space, latitude second. Just want to point that out. So if you ever want to do anything with spatial, this is the best way for you to convert a latitude and longitude point into a geography class. Now, if I scroll down here, you're going to see that I'm doing one little simple thing. By default, the distance method in the link provider for spatial is going to work off of meters. So I'm just converting that to miles. Again, I'm not a math guy. So if you know that this equation is incorrect, email me. I apologize. It's as close as I can get it. Thank goodness for Stack Overflow, right? And now what I'm going to do is I'm going to actually do a distance query off that location table, and I'm going to say, give me everything inside of a circle that's 5 miles wide or 10 miles wide or however wide I'm asking for in my distance query parameter. Does that make sense? Pretty logical? All right. And then I'm going to do a select on that, and you'll see right here, this is where I'm actually converting that DTO into a view model and passing it down the wire. That serializes a heck of a lot better than does, the dbGeography class. All right, so I've got this web API. Now I want to test it. How many of you have ever done web API or REST calls and you think to yourself, oh, testing this can be hard. I have to use curl. Or if I put the URL into IE, it asks me to download the JSON file, so I got to put it into another browser so I can see it. Well, there's an extension I got to blah, 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 blah. Okay? Well, I'm here to tell you that we have a couple of nice, handy little tools that you can use to be able to test your APIs out. The first one, my personal favorite, is the Web API Test Client. It is a NuGet package. How many of you use NuGet? Okay, good. Good to hear. It's nice to hear that people are finally adopting love. I refer to NuGet as love. So I just want to show you that that's the Web API Test Client. I host a show with Corey Fowler on Channel 9 called Webcamps TV. And on that show, we interviewed the guy that created this, and he kind of walks through all of it. His name is Yao. And he's got a really awesome blog post that you'll see kind of right down here. You see the introduction and how-to. I AKA'd that link so it's shortened for you. The real link is like massively long, so I just shortened it for you. And then there's a NuGet package that you can pull it down with. There's a little bit of configuration that you have to do to get it to run, and Yao documents that pretty clearly on his blog. I'm going to show you how to do that today. I've got a cheat sheet. I'm going to do a little bit of copy-pasting, so forgive me. If you use Chrome, there's another one that you can use that my buddy Chris Reisner introduced me to, and he used yesterday during a talk that we did on mobile services, and it's called Postman. It's a Chrome plugin that basically allows you to make REST calls over the wire. Pretty nice tool. Pretty cool idea. Because testing a web API can be difficult because you have to figure out how to call it. Anybody use curl for that? Haven't learned curl yet. Cool. I haven't learned that yet. I need to. So what I'm going to show you real quickly is how to set up that test client in an existing web API project. So what I'm going to do over here, so I'm just going to open up. Is that the right one? Yeah, it was. I'm going to show you in the first project. Sorry about that. I don't think that I have it installed yet. Nope, I don't. You see that I do not have it installed. What I'm going to do here is I'm going to open up my host file. I'm going to open up this thing. And these are the two lines of code that you're going to need to basically use in two specific places. And like I said, Yao documents that pretty well on his site. And I've just got that in my cheat sheet so I can pull that down. So what I'm going to do right here is I'm going to select my web API project, and I'm going to go right here and say manage NuGet packages. I've got include pre-release because he hasn't actually released this yet. It's still kind of in an alpha state. It does work really, really well. So you don't have to worry about the fact that it's alpha. It just hasn't hit, you know, the mainstream yet. I'm going to go up here and I'm just going to type Web API Test Client. Maybe. And I'm just going to go ahead and install that real quick. And it's going to probably ask me to accept the, you know, whatever. That's just going to pull that down. It does have a couple of dependencies that it's going to pull down as well. Should be done here pretty quickly, but I just kind of want to walk through the whole process of getting it set up because it can be kind of a bear. You know, once you try to set it up and you're like, well, I have to add code here, I have to do this, blah, blah, blah. It's really only two lines of code that you have to add once you actually pull down the Web API test client itself. There we go. I'll do an accept here. Sorry about the timing here. Do-do-do. If you've played with Web API in the fore, in the past, have you taken a look at the help pages? Anybody seen the help page for Web API yet? Okay, cool. Well, what we're going to do is we're actually going to add this test client to the help page. Now that I've got that installed, I'm not going to add the lines of code to make it work yet. Instead, I'm just going to actually run this guy. It's just going to fire up an instance of IE, and it's going to show me the default page. And then I'm going to click on the API link for that page, and when I click on it, it's just going to go into the API help page, and it's going to kind of show you documentation about how to call those individual methods. Oh, I see what I did wrong here. I have turned off the specific page. Why didn't it pull up? That's annoying. So IIS is indeed running. Go over here. I'm just going to paste that in. Now, there we go. That's our default page. I'm going to click on this API link right here. And it's going to show you the API help page. And it's going to show you all the different methods that you're going to be able to do in this guy. Now, what you'll see here is it just sort of shows you everything that you expect to get over and everything that you expect to get back. If I were to scroll down here, you're going to see kind of what it expects that you're going to see whenever you know, call it on the wire. You know, if I scroll all the way down here to the bottom, you'll see that there's no way for me to test it. What I'm going to do is I'm going to go back into my cheat sheet here. I'm going to copy out this line of code. I'll show you exactly where to go. I'm going to go into the areas folder, into the help page. It's kind of deep, help API. And again, on that info link, it's actually pointed out, you know, where you need to go. If I scroll down right here, I'm just going to paste it at the bottom of that div. I'm going to take this other line of code right here, and I'm going to paste that into my scripts page. And I'm going to go back to my browser and hit refresh. There you go. Test API. So now I've got a button here that I can click to actually test this API without having to open up another program or go to curl or anything along those lines. I'm just going to take this latitude and longitude because I cannot remember where I am most of the time, mathematically speaking. I'm going to paste in a 5 right here, and I'm just going to do a send. It should call locally and pull us back our code. So you'll see right there, that's actually exactly what you should expect to get on the wire if you were to call this. And you can see that I'm just kind of, you know, positioning us right where we are right now in New Orleans to pull back everything around us in terms of our zip codes. Cool? Makes sense? So that's your Web API test client. I show you that because when you're writing applications with Web API, obviously you're going to want to have to be able to test your API methods to make sure that it's returning what you think it's returning. Now, .NET is supported by a whole bunch of platforms. I do a little bit of stuff with .NET MF. I've done a little bit of Xbox coding in the past. You can imagine that there's a whole bunch of different client platforms out there that you can do stuff with. How many of you have had a PM or a business owner come to you and say, this app needs to work in all client platforms for .NET? Silverlight, Windows Forms, everywhere. Right, once run anywhere, right? All right, there's some good ways and some bad ways to do that. This is not one of the good ways. Anybody ever had to do add as link? The idea behind this slide, I was doing a Silverlight project at one point, and I was also doing some web stuff, and I had multiple clients. And I couldn't reference an assembly from my Silverlight project that I could reference from my web project or from my API project because it wasn't compiled against the Silverlight runtime. You guys ever seen that error message? Same thing is true for WinRT or your phone or something like that. Sometimes there's different requirements on the platform. Well, that's what pickles are for. And this is kind of what happens here when you end up doing it the wrong way. You have a bunch of code files that are reusable, and you just pull them into multiple projects as linked files. That way you don't have to edit the files in multiple places. You just add them as links, you change them in one place, all the projects get updated. That is a hack. We know it's a hack. So what we've done is we've given you a pickle. We've given you portable class libraries. Now, this is common code that runs across all the major .NET client platforms. It can run in a web project as well. It can also run from a console application, which is the first demo that I'm going to show you where we're actually calling this API. You can see that in this case, you're going to have all of your code in one pickle project, and you're going to be able to reference that pickle project from phone, from Silverlight 4 and 5, actually it's phone 7, 7, 5, and 8, from web project, from WinRT, and from Xbox. How many of you think that's awesome? That good stuff? Here's the best part. Xamarin's going to support it soon, too. Imagine C-sharp everywhere. C-sharp everywhere. You'll be able to write a pickle project that you can call from everything, including an Android and an iPhone and an iPad. Who likes that? All right. Don't thank me. Thank the Xamarin guys. All right. So I'm going to show you how to write a pickle project real quick. It's actually extremely simple because we've given you a handy-dandy project type for it. I'm just going to show you this project type before I actually open up a demo. I'm going to say new project. I'm going to go over here to just C#, and you'll see that we have this portable class library guy right here. Now, what happens when I select this is this dialog is going to pop up, and it's going to say, what do you want to target? And you just tell it everything that you want to target. Mr. Hanselman has written a wonderful blog post on PCL projects. There are a few things with them that aren't necessarily done yet. One of those things is some of the async functionality that you've, you know, grown to love over the past year or two. Anybody use async? Cool, you should use it more. More hands should go up. Next time I see you, I want more hands up. Okay, play with async. It makes your code a lot nicer. You don't have to use callbacks and all kinds of hairy stuff. Hanselman has a great blog post on how to use this. And one of the things that he talks about is some of the NuGet references that you have to make to do things like use HTTP client. Because it is also in pre-release, it's almost done, and you'll be able to pull that stuff down. Just to give you an idea of the level of support that we've got for this. Anybody use JSON.NET? Every hand should go up because you're all ASP.NET programmers. And if you're not using it explicitly, you're using it under the hood because it's one of our NuGet packages that we reference. James Newton King is adding support or has already added support for PCL projects. I've already said that Xamarin's going to add support for it too. So this is going to be a growing thing. You're going to see more and more adoption of stuff that you can put into a PCL project. Another one, if you were at the talk that Chris and I did yesterday on mobile services, another one that's going to be adopting it pretty soon is the mobile services SDK team. They're actually adding PCL support for the mobile services client API very, very soon. We showed that off yesterday. I think it's going to be done pretty quick here. Obviously, we used it yesterday, and we had to kind of bang on the door a little bit. But just want to point out that this is going to be a growing thing in .NET. You're going to see a lot more of this because we know your pain. We know that you've had to deal with lots of different client platforms that you had to support in the past, and we want to basically give you the ability to do C# everywhere. The Xamarin guys support that, so that's good stuff. I'm going to close this one down because I've already got a project over here I want to open up. Portable class libraries. I'm just going to open this guy up real quick, and you'll see up at the top here, we've got that core project, and that's a brand new one. And in this core project, or in the solution, I've also got the data layer, and I've also got the web API. So this is everything that you've already seen, plus two additional projects. And this the additional project right here, I've got one thing here called the models class, and I've actually got these models kind of copied over from this guy into here. Not a big deal. I could have just, in a previous version of this demo, actually took that file out of the data project and just moved it up into this PCL project. You can imagine this to be your domain language for all of your clients that are going to be accessing this guy. How are they going to access it, Brady? I'll show you right here. I basically come up with this JSON API client class, probably poorly named. I probably could have called it Geo Client or something along those lines. But in this code, I'm going to do one very simple thing. I'm going to actually, I'm going to make sure I got to get rid of this because it's not going to work. I'm going to go ahead and run locally for a second here. I've got my URL hard-coded. You probably want to put that into config. So what I do here is I build my URL. And I'm basically passing over my latitude, longitude, and distance. And that's going to come over here into our geo controller, which you'll see right here. Here's my get method. You guys know that RESTful stuff means you just use the native HTTP methods like get, post, put, patch, delete, et cetera. This is the get method for this API. I'm just going to basically call that repository get by distance method, take all the stuff that I got from my query string parameters, and just pass it in here and give back the first 10. I don't want to give you back all 47,000 zip codes. We might be here for a little while. All right. So this is actually the client code that all your client platforms would call. I knew up an HTTP client. Then I knew up an instance of an HTTP message. Then I get the response by calling the API, and I get the text of that response, which is going to be a huge blob of JSON, and I use JSON.NET to deserialize that JSON back into an object. Four lines of code, I can call my API. Now I can call this code from pretty much any client. This is what I'm going to do right here. Open up this guy, which is a little bitty console app. You'll see I've got this program right here. We've got a breakpoint set, so I should probably get rid of that. And in this guy, I'm just going to new up an instance of my distance query, and I'm going to await the call, because it is an asynchronous call, to call my JSON API client's get by distance method, pass in my request. And then I'm just going to iterate over everything and show you stuff in the console window. Not really great. It's going to... This time it'll open up the web browser. Odd. So here we go. So I just called a web API through a client API that you will be able to call from any of the .NET platforms. You could even call this from your Xbox code. So you could put your APIs out in Azure and call them from your Xbox game. Okay? Just want to point out that we do have that functionality in a pickle. So there we go. Get rid of this stuff. Why is that opening in Chrome? Oh, I got it set as my default right now. All right, go back over here to the demo or the screen. Modern and mobile clients. So Windows Store apps, Windows Phone apps can use that PCL that I just created. Kind of here's how it works. The Windows Store app or the Windows Phone app calls to the PCL. The PCL is going to call out over HTTP to that web API controller. It's going to do its work. It's going to return JSON down to the client. And then the client's going to do whatever it's supposed to do with that object that it gets down. That make sense? All right. So here's how you would use that web API in modern app programming with Windows 8 store apps. Am I back up there? Okay. So I'm going to open this guy up. And now you'll see a little bit of a change. I'm no longer referencing, or I'm no longer including that web API project in my solution. I don't need to. This is a client app. I don't need to have the web project in there. Since I'm running locally, I'll probably have to open up another instance of Visual Studio and run that web API so that I have something to call. So I'm just going to open this guy up real quick. I'm going to do a quick Control F5 on it. What? Seriously. That's one of those errors that just should go away. Like, Git should just work. It shouldn't care what the end of your lines are like. It's odd to me. All right. I don't know why that's opening up Chrome. I guess I have that set in Studio as my default right now because I was using Postman a minute ago to show something. All right. So in this guy, got my core project again. That's my pickle project with my client API that my Windows 8 application is going to call out to. I've also got a Windows 8 project in this solution that's going to be my client application that people are going to use. Okay, I'm going to go ahead and open this up real quick so I can just show you what it looks like. If I could show you the design. PhilHack hates it when we call applications something big R. Okay? I've heard of SignalR. I have a sample out there that shows how to use a couple of things in Windows Azure called Site Monitor, just big R. And we have another one out there called Cloud Monitor, big R. And the other day I actually walked by Scott Hunter's office and somebody had taken a post-it note and put it over his last name and it said H-U-N-T-R. So we started calling him Scott Hunter. So I just want to point out that, you know, that's sort of our little game that we play. The SignalR guys obviously started that. And obviously it's much more fun to hear Damien say it than myself because I don't have that awesome Australian accent that he's got. Signal all. So here's basically our Zipcoder app. It's pretty simple. Just got a button on it, and I've got a slider. You don't even really need the button, because whenever you change the slider, it's actually going to make the call out to the API. Real quickly, I'm going to show you the design of this guy. Now, I've got a resources object right here with a data template. Now, the way I created this Windows 8 project was to do File, New Project, and to create one of the data-bound apps. So I'm actually going to, again, convert the view model that I get back down from my API into a view model that this application understands. It's just called like an item view model, and it has two properties, line one, line two. Really not that big a deal. And that's really just one of those project templates that we give you so you can see how to do MVVM programming in Windows 8 and just kind of get started with it and party. So that's just our data template real quick. I'm going to scroll down here, and you're going to see that there's our stack panel that contains that slider and the button. And then I've got an items control down here that I'm actually going to data bind to my items property. So if I open up my models real quick, pretty simple. I didn't make these objects. These are made by Visual Studio when you create a data-bound Windows 8 app. It's just your main page view model that inherits from base view model, which implements iNotify property changed. You guys seen the song and dance before? Anybody done this kind of stuff before? Identify property change mean anything to you? Okay. Basically, it's a way of, for those of you that didn't raise your hand, see, if you don't raise your hand, I'm going to have to tell you what it is. All right, not enough. All right. Identify property change basically is a way for the object to let the view know that its value has changed. And whenever you change the property of one of these objects, it's going to say, it's just going to let the view know, hey, you got to do something. And the view is just going to automatically update. For those of you that have been doing web forms for a while, I'm one of them, this should remind you of data bind. That kind of idea, but a lot easier because you don't have to call data bind. It just happens magically. It's wonderful, huh? If I scroll down here to line one, just kind of show you what that looks like. Since this guy inherits from base view model, you'll see that whenever somebody sets the property, I'm going to fire that event. And that event is going to be automatically or automagically, depending on how you look at it, captured by that view, and the view is going to update on the fly. Makes life a lot easier than having to call data bind all over the place. I'm going to close that guy down, and I'm going to go over here into my code. I'm just going to walk through this code real quick and sort of show you what's going on. So I'm going to new up an instance of that main page view model. Whenever we navigate to that view, I'm going to, you know, create an instance of it, and I'm going to say, that's my data context. I want you to data bind this form. I said form. Darn it, this view. I'm going to data bind this view to that view model. Whenever they change the slider, I want you to just go ahead and tell them, hey, you just said 5 miles or 7 miles or however many miles. just to let the user know that we, you know, we got it. We're, you know, we're good here. And then we're going to do something interesting. We're going to call the getGeoPosition method. We're going to do the same thing whenever you click that button. So it's really just the same piece of functionality that we're going to be doing. Now, if I go down here to getGeoPosition, you're going to see the first thing we're going to do is we're going to clear out that view model list. Then we're going to let you know that we're going to do something by changing the button's content to searching. If for whatever reason you click the yes button when the application asks you if you want to enable geo tracking, hopefully you would click yes because you trust the app. We're going to go ahead and set up some parameters to tell the geocoder how to actually work. Anybody done geolocation in Windows 8 yet? It's like three lines of code. It's fantastic. It's really, really cool. This is actually extra stuff that you don't always have to do. So what I'm going to do there is I'm going to call the await geo.getPositionAsync method. And the reason we have to await that is if you haven't run this app before, the application's first thing it's going to do, as soon as you try to get the geo position, is it's going to say, hey, some people don't want to be tracked. So I'm going to ask the user, do you want to allow geo tracking? What if that button comes up and you get up and you, I don't know if I want them to know where I am. I don't know. Should I click yes? Should I click no? What do I do? Oh, I don't know. We want to wait for you. So we're going to call the await version of this guy because it might take you a minute or two to decide whether or not you want to click that button. All right, so that's why we're calling it in an await process. Scroll down here a little bit more. And then whenever that's done getting called up here by the other methods that are making a call to it, whenever we get back to position, which is where you are, we're going to call the showZips method. And the showZips method is going to take that geoposition object that is handed to it by Windows. It's going to grab the latitude and longitude. It's also going to look at that slider's value and presume that's the distance that you want to go with. Then, guess what it's going to do? Just like we did before from our console app, we're going to call the JSON API client. Now, a couple months back, everybody was freaking out. They were like, oh, I can't do this in Windows 8 programming. I can't do that in Windows 8 programming. That's the nice thing about Pickles. Is it's going to be able to unify all that stuff for you and give you that core functionality that you know and love from all your other .NET applications. So you'll be able to share this functionality across your apps, right? Anybody ever done that thing where you are doing like Windows Forms programming or XAML programming and you call something that takes a second to run? So you do it in like a different thread, and when the data comes back and you want to slap it in your data grid, you just like do a data bind and it basically gives you this heinous error message that says you're trying to update the UI from another thread and I can't do that because that's bad. Okay, that's what this code right here is for. That code really isn't the important code in this particular method. The code within it is. I'm just calling it in that dispatcher.runAsync guy so I don't get my least favorite of all error messages. Okay, anybody seen that error message before? You had to do like begin invoke or something like that? Who loves that error message? Yeah, that's what I thought. Okay, so this is the way that you deal with that in Windows 8 programming. The way that you deal with that in Windows Phone 8 programming is actually very similar. Then once we get everything back, we're gonna tell you that we've got it by changing the text of that button back to find and re-enabling it. Okay? Make sure I've got my API running so I don't embarrass myself here. Yes, indeed I do. Go over here to my JSON API client, and I am looking at localhost. Dadgummit. Kill that. That is running. Now I'm just going to run this app real quick. That's going to consume my desktop because I'm not going to run it in the simulator. You'll see there's our ZipCoder app. I'm going to go over here and change it to 4 miles. God willing, it will just call out and everything will be cool and handy dandy. Seeing a little bit of latency today for some reason. There we go. All right, so we've got back everything, and if I were to shorten it to 1 mile, we should get fewer zip codes back. Maybe. Like I said, I've seen some odd latency today on my computer, which I love this computer. If you haven't seen one yet, this is the Lenovo X1. It's like 3 pounds, 10-point touchscreen. Absolutely fantastic. You can probably see me touching on the screen there. Well, of course, it's going to latency out for me right now. It's not going to return anything. But you saw it return the first time. There we go. It's going to return some stuff. Las Vegas. I guess this is the values that I called whenever I was in Vegas the last time. That's odd. I guess I've got that hard-coded somewhere. Darn it. Do I have it hard-coded? I do? That's embarrassing. Oh, well. Maybe I did. Oh, well. You get the idea, right? Everybody cool with that? So we'll just pretend we're in Vegas, the other party town. Okay. just for a minute. Not as good at music. So we've called that API through our Pickle project from a Windows 8 application. And now we're going to call the same API using the same client from a Windows Phone application. And I can tell you for sure, this one might freak out, so forgive me and the demo gods, because the Windows Phone emulator has been giving me fits for the past couple days with its network stack support. Nothing against it. It does work indeed. I just haven't configured it properly. I was going to meet with one of our phone guys today. I didn't get a chance to meet with him because guess what? He was on stage. So I didn't get a chance to talk to him. But here's the Phone 8 app, and you'll see here, here's our core again. Same kind of thing that we had before. I'm going to call localhost, but in this case, I'm going to have to change it to my live API, which is running out in my Azure website site. So I'm going to have to change this because Windows Phone has a kind of a difficult time calling localhost. There's a lot of networking plumbing that you can do to get it to call localhost that you just don't want to see me do right now. Okay, I would recommend that you go to one of the Windows Phone guys, talk to Z how to do that. I plan on going to one of them myself because this is a demo that I've done a couple of times and it makes life a lot easier when it works. All right, so what I'm going to do here is show you my view models real quick. Got my main view model again, and this is exactly the same thing. I just said new phone project. I said I wanted a data-bound app, and now I'm going to basically take the stuff that I'm getting back from the API, and I'm going to reformat it into the objects that I can data-bind directly into my view or that my view expects to see. And it's kind of the same thing. I've got sample property, line one, line two, that kind of thing. So here's our line one and line two guide just again. And I've got the iNotify property changed implementation in here. Exactly the same sort of client code as well that we had in the Windows 8 store application. So it's very similar in nature. And again, this may blow up on me, so forgive the demo gods for me. But what I'll do here is I'll open up this main page XAML file. And again, Phil Hack is going to have to, you know, get frustrated with me because I'm keeping the R, keeping ZipCoder. But this is the mobile version of ZipCoder. This is the application that I could use to call out. Now, Chris and I had an interesting question yesterday. One of the questions that they asked us was, how do I pick between, let's say I want to build a mobile app and I want to call an API. How do I pick between using something like Windows Azure Mobile Services and just creating a web API and calling that web API specifically? I can explain to you the difference, at least my opinion of those differences. If you're a control freak and you want to basically build your database using something like EF and kind of scaffold everything up, you would probably want to do that using Web API. If you've got to be done tomorrow, you might want to start using mobile services. Because if you go to mobile services, you go into the portal, you actually just like create a new mobile service, it'll give you projects that you can download. And the nice thing about mobile services is it's basically just a huge REST API that you can call that wraps around your database that you've specified the models for whenever you actually created that mobile service in Windows Azure. So I just want to kind of differentiate the two. One's not better or worse than the other. You can do kind of the same thing across the board with Web API that you can do with mobile services. It's just kind of, you know, how much control do you want? How fast do you want to develop it? Do you want to have boilerplate code that you can get started with? Because if you do, that's when you want to probably use mobile services, because it'll give you a couple of projects that you can download. Okay? Anybody play with mobile services at all yet? Go to any mobile services talk this week? Okay, cool. So I'm not trying to say that one's better or worse than the other, I promise. What I'm going to do real quick is go into the view code of this guy. I'm not going to walk through the code as slowly as I did before because code's pretty much exactly the same. I've got a view model that I'm going to bind to. I've got a geolocator that I'm going to talk to. It's going to give me back my position. That was kind of freaking out on me earlier today. Whenever they click the button or when they change the slider, I'm going to do get my position. I'm going to pass that into the show zips method, et cetera, et cetera. So it's really just the same sort of code that I have in that Windows Store app. Just to point something out here, I actually lifted a lot of this code into the mobile app from my Windows 8 app. I wrote the Windows 8 app, got it working, copied, pasted, made about 8 changes, it worked. Since I'm calling the same API client, it's not really that hard to change the stuff. And since the code is very syntactically similar, it wasn't really that much of a pain to actually get it to work in both places. One difference that I will show you, if I go right down here, you'll see that I've got dispatcher begin invoke. I think it's a different name. Run async is what it is in the Windows Store app. Okay? I hope everybody that's leaving is actually going to catch their plane and the talk isn't as boring as it appears as though it is by everybody leaving. Okay? Or if you bored? Anybody? Okay, good. I can dance or something. Okay. Say what? Okay, cool. So what I'll show you right here, I've got this here because earlier today when I was walking through this demo, I was actually like kind of having some latency call on my API. So I just put this in there in case I happen to get back null. I'm going to warn you, we may get back null. I have to debug this and figure out why a little bit deeper later on. Can't figure out why sometimes I'm getting back null with this. But the one thing that I will point out is that I'm actually going to call out to my location API running out in Windows Azure. So I'm going to run this guy right here, and it's going to fire up real quickly. It's going to fire up the Windows Phone emulator. Handy little tool. It's got one neat little thing in it that I'll show you after I successfully or not make a call. And one thing that I'm going to point out here is that when I make this particular call, you're going to see zip codes coming back around Redmond, Washington. Why do you think that is? What do you think the default location of the emulator is? That's funny. Is that what it is in the iOS version? Is it Cupertino? Okay. You're just being a smart aleck. All right, so here's our zip coder application. I'm gonna click this real quick. Hopefully I won't get back null. If it does, it's gonna break right here in our debugger. But I wanna show you something neat with that emulator once it returns. I don't wanna screw it up while it's calling. But you see this little handy dandy arrow right, there we go, yay! So I can, and this is cool. This is neat, huh? I can touch screen the emulator and simulate touch screening my phone. Uh-oh, that could be bad. Had to push it. All right, cool. Let's really push it. Maybe it'll work. Now, what I'm going to show you here in this little emulator, there we go. So the demo gods were mean in the hotel room, but they're being nice here. Odd, huh? The monkeys, yeah. So if I open this, you'll see that we've got this big map right here. Okay, I'm gonna test the demo god's patience today. I'm gonna scroll out real quick. If this works, you have to applaud, because that would be the first time. And it's not a limitation of the emulator, it's a limitation of Brady. Probably just not doing it right. So I'm gonna click here and see what it does. It puts down where I am right here. I'm gonna shrink that a little bit, and we'll probably go into the debugger right now. I'm not sure why. So, that's cool. That worked. You guys are my lucky charms. You have to go back to Redmond with me. We're going to all go back together. Luckily, I've been upgraded, so we'll all fly in style, so that'll be good. And it's not because I'm special. It's because I fly a lot on Delta. So, all right. Xamarin. Got your monkeys ready? Okay. So this is what I'm going to show you, a little quick tool with Xamarin. And what this is going to do is pretty much something that will appear somewhat sacrilegious. We're going to do an Android app or an iOS app right in Visual Studio using C#. Now, I'm going to do an Android app today, and I'm going to explain to you why I'm going to do an Android app, because I don't have a Mac up here. Okay? I have to have a Mac if I want to do some of the compilation, and it's a pretty interesting setup. It's actually not that bad. A lot of guys that do this kind of stuff, they'll actually get a Mac, install Windows on it, do their stuff in Visual Studio, and they'll put the Xamarin client stuff on their Mac as well, so that when they have to do the compilation, it'll just call their own computer. Pretty logical. If I had a router and a Mac and a lot more time and kind of a little bit bigger budget, I would have been able to do that for you, but forget about it. The demo gods would have crucified me. So I'm not going to do that today. Chris Reisner actually did a pretty interesting demo using Xamarin in one of his mobile services talks this week. So I do want to point out that you can do that stuff. You just have to have a Mac sitting here with Xcode installed on it. And you, whenever you want to do the compilation, the first thing it says is, where's your Mac? And you have to tell it the Mac, and your PC has to have access over the network to your Mac. It'll reach out to the Mac, do the compilation, and bring back the bits and deploy the bits to the emulator and run. It's absolutely fantastic. Is that not groovy or what? You see the Xamarin guys on the floor? Hug them. Okay. Anybody heard the name Miguel? I can't say his last name. Diacaza? Okay. Okay. He's kind of the open source .NET love guy. It's wonderful. He's kind of behind some of this stuff. Wonderful guy. I actually emailed him and said, hey, I'm going to do a demo of your product. Can I have a demo license? He goes, sure, dude. And he handed it to me. So that was nice. Probably because I had to hand someone on the CC line. That kind of helped things. But, you know, it works. So I want to show you real quick how you can communicate. This kind of has to settle in. This is sort of like my slide when I show you that SignalR is a real-time abstraction over HTTP. I make everybody just sit there and hang out for a second, just process it, because it doesn't make sense. I'm going to show you how you can do this Android development using C# and Xamarin. I've already got my Android emulator running, so this demo should go a little bit quicker than it has in the past, because it does take a second for that to fire up. Go ahead and kill this project here. Close this down. Now, that guy is very similar in nature to the Windows Phone emulator. It can't hit localhost. If it can, there's some rigmarole that you have to go through that I have not yet learned. I'm not a networking guy, so I just haven't learned how to do that yet. But you can. It's just, you know, a process. So what I'm going to do again is to reach out and make a call back out to my Windows Azure deployment of this API guy. And you'll see right here, there's our emulator. It's not as pretty as some of the other emulators. I could have installed one of the x86 versions, but yeah, no. So I want to open this guy up real quick. I'm not going to walk too deeply through this code, but it should make a little bit of sense. It's this activity guy right here, and onCreate is borrowed from the Android SDK for Java. It's also called onCreate or Create. I can't remember which one it is. I think it's a little C. Anybody ever done any stuff with Android using the SDK? So some of this syntax is going to be, or some of the method names are going to be similar or synonymous with what the Android SDK is going to give you. Why? Because we kind of made the assumption, if you've done Android in the past and now you want to do Android with C#, we probably ought to make it kind of similar for you so that you don't like freak out when you see the code and it's a completely different API. So the Xamarin guys made it pretty similar. Now, I'm actually hard coding the Latin long right here. I'm doing that because I didn't have time to actually go through and figure out how to emulate geo-tracking in my Android application. Okay, so I didn't go through that, but it does have that support. So you can do all that stuff in Xamarin if you want to download Xamarin and try it out. And their documentation is out of control good. Now, in this guy, I'm not referencing that PCL project yet, so I'm not going to be going through that PCL in this particular implementation. I'm not going to be doing that because it's not yet supported by the Xamarin guys. It's not yet supported by Xamarin Studio. They've kind of given me clues that they will be adding it, and they want to add it because they know that would really make Ubiquity a lot easier. I don't have a release date, so if you want to know, I'm sorry, I just don't know. The Xamarin guys are on the floor this week. They know. You can ask them, and hopefully they would tell you. One of the other things that they're going to be able to add pretty soon is support for the HTTP client async stuff that you like about .NET. So they're really going to have Ubiquity across both those platforms. It makes life a lot easier. You can do everything in C# now. It's fantastic. And I've got this values adapter right here. The methodology is a little bit different than it is in MVVM land, like the Microsoft guys in here know. They just sort of use a different set of syntax. So they've got this concept of an adapter. You pass it an object and you tell it what to do when it data binds that object to the view. And in this case, I'm just going to kind of return it as text, really. Not going to do anything special with it. See down here? I'm going to new up a text view and just show you a list of text view guys, like right there in my client. It's going to look very similar to what it looks like in all the other guys. All right, so I'm going to run this real quick. I got my emulator running right here. I'm just going to click it to make it hot. Oh, I don't want to do that. Click the home button here. Home button. Oh, I just took a picture. All right. So what you see here, when I hit F5, it's going to throw this thing up and it's going to say, hey, select one emulator that you want me to run in. If it wasn't running it, we'd probably be here for about 2 minutes waiting for it to spin up because it does take a second. If you wanted to start another one, you can click this guy. And there's a whole series of emulators that you could choose from. They also have ones that you can download. The gentleman on the floor actually told me about the Intel Haxam emulator. It's basically an x86 emulator, and apparently it fires up a lot faster than does the old school emulators. I'm just going to use one of the old school emulators. I'm going to click OK real quick. And what that's saying is, I see that you have an emulator running right now. Tell me which one you want me to deploy to. If I had two running, there would have been two in that list. So you'll see here, this is going to fire up. I'm going to zoom in on it real quick. Oh. I'm going to click this button. And that's actually going to reach out on the wire, and it's going to make a call out to my API bring back the JSON, and convert the JSON into objects. You probably saw another really handy method that I called in there. I used JSON.NET. He has implemented JSON.NET for Xamarin in iOS and for Xamarin in Android. You see what's happening now? The community is getting together and they're like, we really like .NET. It's actually a pretty cool platform. Only 12 years old. What's that, like version one rule? Like version five, you trust a shit. So, all right. Somebody hit control four here and zoom back out. I'm gonna kill this puppy now because we no longer need it. I'm gonna close this guy down and again switch back over here to our slides. All right. So that's how you communicate with an Android client. Anybody think that's cool? C sharp everywhere, make you happy? Cool. All right. All right. Sharing data across APIs from site to site should be easy. It should be simple. It's all HTTP. All right? Unfortunately, it's not as simple as it should be sometimes. Why isn't it as simple as it should be? Security. We want it to be secure, too. Here's what you've probably done in the past. You make an HTTP request to foo.com. Foo.com hands you back a blob of HTML that you then render in your favorite browser. Then you make an AJAX call back to your server, and you get back JSON or XML or something like that, and then you do some work with it. And then you think to yourself, wow, bar.com has this API that I'd like to create a mashup with. I want to call their API and call my API and do stuff together. Remember that example that I told you before? This little demo API that I've given you is like I give you my lat and long, you give me a list of zip codes, then I take that list of zip codes and I call my API and I hand you back all the stores. This is how it should work. So what happens whenever I call that guy? You shall not pass. Okay? That's what happens. Anybody been bitten by this before? Cool. All right, so you can't do jQuery calls to two servers, basically is the idea. So what you do is you wrap it up in what's called cores. Cross-origin resource sharing. And once you do that, the two sites are going to trust one another. You can also do this in mobile services. You can tell mobile services, I want you to trust this URL or that URL, so that whenever somebody takes their API and deploys it to somewhere like Windows Azure websites, and it's got a different URL than the URL that my mobile service is running at, they'll be able to call my mobile service API from my website, because the domain is different. Okay, so that's what cores helps you do. All right? So here's how you can enable cross-origin resource sharing. And I want to go ahead and tell you one other thing about this real quick. I mentioned my show earlier. It's called Webcamps TV on, actually it's not mine, it's mine and Corey's, my professional wife. You can basically, take care, sir. You can basically take a look at this show, because on this show, we talked to the gentleman who implemented the original cores implementation that we took through, guess what? A pull request. The cores implementation that we use in Web API was originally created by a member of the community who used to work for a company called DevelopMentor. And he has his own implementation of cores for a different framework that he built. And when Dan Roth and the other guys on the Web API team saw it, they said, wow, that's really cool. You should, you know, submit a pull request for it. He did. They looked at it and they went, it's pretty cool. Let's work together and make some changes on it. So this gentleman actually worked together hand in hand with the Web API team, and they built out the cores implementation. I do want to tell you this. The cores implementation is not something that you're going to get out of the box in Visual Studio 2012 today. But I'm going to show you how you can get it today if you want to play with it. I want to open up my browser real quick, and I'm going to go to ASP.NET Webstack. ASP.NET Webstack. Codeplex.com. God, I hope that's it. Yeah, that's it. So this is the Codeplex repository for ASP.NET and Web API, which is what? Open source. It's an open source framework that you can actually submit implementations to, like this other gentleman did. Now, if you want to play with this stuff, you can do that in one of two ways. You can do a git clone on it. It's right there. Or you can use the Nightly Builds repository. There's an MVP here this week named Martin Bayou. Martin Bayou and a couple of his colleagues in Belgium, they're hilarious guys. I highly recommend having a beer with them at some point. They have this service called MyGet. You probably see my MyGet sticker on the back of my computer. How many of you have heard of MyGet? Cool, I get to tell you about MyGet. MyGet is like one of my top five favorite, you know, companies out there or products out there. MyGet is like NuGet. It uses all the NuGet stuff, but what it does is you tell it which source control repository you want it to watch and how often you want it to build, and whenever you check in code, it'll pull it out, build it, compile it, and then guess what else it can do? It can push it to the NuGet feed. It can push it directly to NuGet. So all you need to do to get your NuGet package published into NuGet is to commit code. It's pretty cool. It's like a build server for your NuGet packages. But you can also set up things like your own private MyGet repositories. That's what we've done at Microsoft. We're actually using MyGet to host some of this stuff, and we're giving you the URL. So when you go into Visual Studio, if you want to play with this core stuff, you would take that URL. I'm going to show you how to do this real quick. I'm going to open up my cores-enabled site real quick and show you where this is. You will go up here to Tools, Tools, Options. You'd scroll down here to Package Manager, and you see this Package Sources thing? You literally add that as one of your package sources. And whenever you want to do pull down a NuGet package, one of the things in the dialog or one of the things in the Package Manager console window down at the bottom that works and looks like PowerShell, one of the things that you can do is specify which feed you want to pull from. So if you want to test out all the latest and greatest bits, aka the nightly builds, aka the year of living dangerously, you want to add an additional feed to Visual Studio, you want to switch to that feed, go down to your Package Manager console and type update package, update-package. When you do that, it's going to go out to that feed instead of the regular NuGet feed, and it's going to update MVC, Web API, blah, 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 blah. It's going to pull all that stuff down for you. Now, that's pretty cool, but I need to say one more thing about that. Nightly builds, okay? Be careful. Okay, this stuff is, you know, kind of volatile, all right? We're pretty much tied up right now. We're pretty much good to go because we have a lot of new stuff coming out. So the first thing we have to get done is the framework. So the first thing that we had to build was the framework, and the framework's open source, so it's all out there, and you can pull it down all you want to and party with it and report bugs. And believe me, the guys watch the bugs. They watch the issue list. They want to give you what you want. I've talked to them about it extensively. They love the fact that they're open source. They're all about it. So what I've done here is I've created two projects. The second one is a project that when I run it, I'm going to want to call an API running on a different server. In this case, this is going to be a different port on localhost. That's actually why I set it to Chrome, because I haven't set up the security stuff in IE. There's a couple of security settings you have to do in IE to kind of make cores hot. But what I'm going to do in this guy is I'm going to show you this code. Now, this is not a special API. This is not my demo API. This is file new project web API. You got your values controller. And your values controller is really just going to return a series of strings. It's going to return an array of strings. It's just to show you that it'll work. All right? So what I'm going to do first is I'm going to go to my web API test page, which I've already enabled on this guy. I'm just going to call it. And that's calling back to myself. Calling back to myself. Now I'm going to go back over to my other running instance of Studio right here, and I'm going to run my cores-enabled app, which isn't quite cores-enabled yet. Now you'll see here it didn't fire up a browser, but it's running. See that break right there? It is indeed running. Now what I need to do now is to look at the properties and get the port, 41794. I'm going to go back into my Web API test client, and I'm going to put something right here. What did I say, 41794? You guys are good. I'm going to change that. And it's going to Gandalf me. You shall not pass. You've seen this before, right? We're like, oh, Security. All right? Damn security. All right, so what I'm going to do now is I'm going to go back over here into my Cores Enabled app, which isn't yet Cores Enabled, and I'm going to open up two files. Here's the first one. Now, I've just enabled Cores in my web app. I've said I'm cool with it. All right? I'm just going to enable Cores. I'm going to say you can call me from another site. Then I'm going to go into my controller. I'm going to expand this region. My Doug Henning impression. And I'm going to enable Cores on this guy right here. So in this case, I'm turning on Cores in this controller. Now, if you go out and you look at the specs, which we've actually put in that ASP.NET webstack.codeplex.com repository, we've put all the specifications for our Cores implementation out there. You can configure this stuff. There are different, basically, repositories that you can say, in my web config, I want to list out the 9 sites that I'm going to let call me, and anybody else can't. So you can actually have really low-level control on that, and it's all documented in the CodePlex project. So feel free to go out there and take a peek at it. So now that this has changed and I've enabled Cores, I'm going to run it again. And I'm going to go back over here to this guy. Boom. So you see what I've done? I've called an API from another server. Just a different port on the same box. I'm calling the API from another server. If I was to then deploy this application out to Windows Azure websites and run the API test client again, I could go into this API test client guy, put in my local host, and I could call my API from a site that's hosted on Windows Azure. My API would be local. All right, so that shows you how you can use cross-origin resource sharing to share stuff across the wire with different sites. All right? And again, that is something that is in the framework. It is indeed new. Yes, stop debugging. And it will be coming out extraordinarily soon. And that's not Microsoft soon. That's like really, really, really soon. Okay. All right. Now, web API and authentication. Perfect timing. It's going to be about a 5-minute demo, and then I'll take some questions. Here's how it works. All right. Okay, and I'm going to step through some of this code real quick just to kind of show you what it looks like. I'm not going to go too deep into it. If you want this code, please get in touch with me because I can give some of it to you. Can't give all of it out. We've got some stuff in there that's not quite done yet. I wouldn't want to give it to you because it's not quite done yet. But here's kind of the process. The Web API app is going to fire up, and you're going to configure it using kind of one line of code in your app start. You're going to tell it to use what's called OAuth bearer tokens. That should give you an idea of what we're going to be even more firmly adopting in the future, OAuth. We're going to be using more OAuth implementations. The client app is going to ask Web API. It's going to say, hey, what OAuth providers do you support? And the Web API is going to go, blah. It's going to hand you back all the ones that it supports. The user will then select one of those, like I like Google, I like Facebook, I like Twitter. It's going to pick, you know, the user can pick which one you want to use, and it will redirect you. Just like in any normal application, it will redirect you to that site's login page. You'll log in, and it'll redirect you back to the API site with kind of a token, a long, long, long string. You've seen this before, right? OAuth stuff. It's going to send that back to you, and then it's going to basically go into your web API with that access token and light up. It's going to be okay. What's going to happen next is the API is going to pass down to you a user info object. And that user info object is going to say, he's Brady Gaster, he authenticated with Twitter, his access code is this. Then you take that access code and you use what's called a bearer token, an OAuth bearer token. It's sort of like a header, and it basically takes that token and it attaches it to every single HTTP request that you're going to make back out to that API. So just like we recently gave you in the ASP.NET stack and in WebMatrix, where you could very easily go in and say, I want to use Google and I want to use Facebook, we're going to give you all that kind of functionality in Web API now. So you'll be able to log in with Web API using bearer tokens using one of those providers. Now, the code that I'm going to show you today, again, is not completely finished yet, and there's a lot of it, so we're not going to go too deeply through it. I'm just going to show you kind of the high points of it and like reiterate that whenever you get Visual Studio 2013, this is going to be integrated into that environment. Whenever you do file new project and you create one of these projects, you're going to get this functionality in there for you now. So you'll be able to get started and get going real quick. going to be a lot easier. Demo, I'm going to walk you through a multi-client authentication process. I'm really probably only going to have time to show you the Windows 8 one. I've got one other demo that I really want to show. It will take us over. I'll do a show of hands if you want to see it. So what I've got here, I've got a spy application. If I go to this guy, you'll see that I've got identity config. I think that's where it is. Is that where it is? No, that's not where it is. Is that where it is? No, that's not where it is. Here it is. So here we go. I'm going to scroll down so you can't see my Twitter code. So I'll delete that app as soon as the demo's over. But what I've got in this guy is basically a list of providers that I'm going to tell it that I want it to support. Google, Facebook, Twitter, insert other names here, LinkedIn, whatever. I don't know which ones we're going to support out of the box, but the ones we got in this particular rev are going to be Google, Facebook, Twitter, I think also Windows Live, as you probably know it, Windows tokens. All right? So I'm going to set the store app to be the startup. Set a startup project. And in this case, again, we have this portable class here. And look at there. It's just like what I showed you in my demo. We're giving you these portable client libraries so that you'll be able to do all this stuff from all the different platforms that you already know and love. Windows Phone, Windows 8, et cetera, desktop, blah, blah, blah. So we're going to give you all this functionality. I can tell you that this project right here, Web Authentication Broker, is something that's going to be built into the framework. This is actually used by the mobile app. When you run the mobile app, it's going to basically broker in a conversation between the different OAuth providers and your view to show you what's going to be supported. Okay? So if I shrink this back down again, and you'll see here that I don't have anything enabled. I'm going to go ahead and enable Google Auth. I'm going to hit run here. And it's going to fire up this app. Oh, shoot. It's going out and looking at that. I have to do localhost. Sorry. That might not actually work. I have to deploy this. Shucks. Okay, this is actually deployed. Let me see if I can run it localhost. That might not be pretty. I actually have deployed that out to Windows Azure to show how it works. I just don't want to do a deployment right now and play with it all that much. Because the demo gods could be a little angry at me if I try and do that. Okay, hit run here. Hopefully it'll hit localhost and pull it down. It's probably going to blow up. There, so Google. Okay, so how many of you have done this ASP.NET stuff where you like enable Twitter and you enable Google, and then you have to go into the login page and you have to add the button and tell it which provider to use? And you usually forget one of those steps, right? Well, what's actually happening behind the scenes is that the portable class library is asking the API, which OAuth providers do you support? And it's passing down a list of them. And now I can click that Google one and go ahead and log in. I don't want to do that yet. What I'm going to do now is I'm going to go back into this code over here, my startup auth, and I'm going to uncomment my Twitter guy. I'll run it again. Of course, that's going to happen. Didn't do a compilation on it, I guess. Maybe. There we go. So now the Web API can inform your client application what it supports. So this is the way you can do Web API authentication and authorization from your other clients that you don't have to use a cookie with. All right? So if I click Twitter here, oh, of course that's going to happen. And the reason that's going to happen, I can tell you, is because I've told Twitter that my application is actually running out on the web. So I'm going to run it out on the web. Okay, sorry, one more time. There we go, Twitter. And now it's actually going to go out to Twitter and let me authenticate, and then it's going to bounce me back to that API and log me in. Okay, is that pretty cool? You guys like that better than having to do it yourself? Cool. And I can tell you, I'm sorry to tell you that I can't show you the real bits yet, but I have been forbidden, strictly. And the last thing that I want to show you, this will take us slightly over. How many of you do anything in Office? Use Microsoft Office for anything? How many of you have played with the new Office development concept? You know what it's written in? Here's a hint. It's not COM. Okay? The new Office development framework and SharePoint development framework is HTML and JavaScript. You can write HTML and JavaScript applications that run and interact inside of an Excel, PowerPoint, or Word, or project application or even in Outlook, or if you're using Outlook Web Access, it will even work in OWA. So all those applications that you've done, you know, forever, guess what? You can still keep doing them. You can still keep writing Office add-ins. But if you don't want to have to do that, and you want to basically write your application to, you know, in HTML and JavaScript and then deploy it somewhere yourself, you can do that. And what I've got here is a pretty simple application. I'm done, guys. But I want to show this one thing. I've got a pretty simple web API controller right here that I'm going to put a breakpoint on. I'm passing it a JToken, which again is part of the Newtonsoft JSON guy. And I've got this Office app right here. And in this Office app, I'm actually telling it, if I were to open up this XML file right here, I'm telling it that I want you to load up localhost 31563. Now, you can install the Office development tools for free from the web platform installer. If you have Office 2013, you can start to play with this. Why am I telling you about this? Anybody have any idea how many users of Office there are in the world? A billion. How many of you like to program so much you'll do it for free forever? That's what I thought. Nobody. Okay? How many of you would like to have a billion customers? Okay. You have access to a billion customers. Yes, they're not all on Office 2013 yet, but they will be eventually. The nice thing about this is you can deploy your applications out to Azure or wherever else you want to deploy them to. You can even put them into the Office store, and users of Office will have access to those applications directly over the web. I'm going to run this guy real quickly, and what you're going to see is it's actually going to fire up Excel, and it's going to pull up a little bitty window over here in the right-hand side. Now, I don't have anything interesting over there. I've just got a save button because I'm going to show you how to use Web API with Office, too. I'm going to go over here and I'm going to type, got Goo, got Hansel, oh, got Hanselman, and I'm going to select this stuff right here and click Save. I'm cool with that. Oop. There's one. There's two. And it'll update the GUI right there. Thanks for coming. Thanks for staying after, too.